Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5.0 out of 10 dining experience, the objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good. Friend of the Doughboys, Marissa Pinson and John Glover were the most recent guests as they reviewed Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many Costco hot dogs they could fit in their mouths. Damn, I wish I was on that episode. I'd crush that. Head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast, FINEDININGPODCAST, and click B's giveaway to enter a giveaway for an all expenses paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at 5.02 out of 10 for you and up to three of your friends. And you could watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th episode. Disclaimer, $50 will be provided for transportation along with a $200 Applebee gift card. I love doing those fast read disclaimer things. Go give Fine Dining a listen, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, the number one work from home, ruining his wife's current conference call, boy. Yeah, it's me. All you gotta do is trust me, Jackson Maine boy, Johnny G, John Gabris. Joining me as always in the High and Mighty Studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, you know, I think I have to lose that part of my intro because Arthur is no longer joining me in here because the guests aren't joining me in here. And if my wife is working from home, that means Arthur is sitting on the floor staring at her, hoping for lunch scraps. But who is joining me remotely? Someone I've been listening to on podcasts and recently become a fan of, and now it's fucking your turn, shitheads. From Brightwall Dark Room, it's Fran Hoffner.
Hi. It's so hard to match this energy, but I'm going to try.
You don't have to at all. That's just so you know how dumb this podcast is, and now the pressure's off for you. Now you realize this is the kind of shit where this is the kind of show where that happens means pressure is off for the guest. Just the fact that here is enough.
I love it. I teach part-time and I love teaching. I think it like fulfills all of the like broken brain stuff that like comedy fulfills. But yes. Like my energy in the classroom, I got to skate by on being sort of like medium energy, like cool teacher. But like I have to be like shock jock teacher on Zoom to get them to like participate in anything. It's like, you weigh in, I need you to weigh in. Like, who's with me? We love in like stanzas. Like, it's so stressful.
Yeah, you got what funny Zoom background today will get my students to pay attention to me more.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. Like, I have to come in like ready. It's like, I can't wing it anymore. I can't be like, we'll just see how we all feel on this Zoom. It's like, no, I have to do a set. Yeah. I have to have a set. 70-minute set twice a week.
I think that's why my friends from who like we were doing Zoom cocktail hours with when the quarantine started, I feel like that's why they stopped, is because of my same energy of like, quiet, hold on, I got 11 things I thought about Joe Biden today that I want to share with you guys. They're like, no, this isn't a fucking podcast, homie, shut up.
But this is a podcast.
This, unfortunately for the listeners, is a podcast. I am doing, I should say it here, this is week two or week one, I'm not sure what order I'm putting them out in, of I Miss Movies Month. I personally, and I know a lot of people do, a lot of my peers do, we miss going to the movies. And the energy, even the energy of new movies coming out felt like, I didn't realize how much I was looking forward to movies for a slice of happiness in life previously. And that's embarrassing. Like, I remember being like, oh, well, you know, December we have blank. And I'd be like giddy about it coming out and it would have something to look forward to. Now it feels like I'm just hoping the world opens again and I can see Tenant on my fucking BlackBerry or whatever. but I wanted to have film heads, movie heads on to talk about movies in assorted different ways. So I reached out to you, Fran. I first,
fell in podcast fandom of yours, hearing you defend one of my favorite movies, The Holiday, on Blank Check.
Perfect movie.
Perfect fucking movie.
Earns that 2 hour, 17 minute runtime, not a minute wasted.
Very few movies that have Cameron Diaz as 25% of it are perfect movies. This is one of them.
That's one of them. And I loved hearing you talk about Heat, which is a movie I love, about the fellas.
Yeah. I'm a huge Michael Mann fan. I'm part of the Mandom.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'm a man boy. I'm going to just keep coming up with that on like 11 levels. But doing a movie podcast and getting to rewatch a movie that someone else chooses for you, but someone whose taste you trust. I think I sort of just hijacked that with this. And when you pitched the movie Local Hero, I was like, I've never even heard of it, never saw it. And this is the perfect thing for me, a movie I would never pick on my own. And then you choosing it. And I'm just rolling right into this part, I guess. And I fucking loved it. It was awesome.
I'm so glad. I was like, I think John's going to be into this. Like, it's the kind of thing I watched. I didn't really know very much about it at all, but I was like, I think this is the type of energy of a film that I like. And I was so pleasantly surprised by it. I'm not used to being pleasantly surprised anymore by anything.
Yeah, and you kind of pitched it to me as like, I'm thinking of watching this movie, or like you hadn't even watched it yet, I feel like, when you mentioned it to me. And I was like,
yeah,
that's the kind of bold fucking recos I like. You're like, hey, I'm diving into this movie. Why don't you, hey, if we both hate it or like it, we can discuss it on the pod. And the confidence, the movie, I did not know what I was watching for maybe the entire film. Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't describe, yeah. Like, if someone was like, what's the genre or the premise? I'd be like, they don't make a lot of movies like this anymore.
No, they don't really make fundamentally like a fish out of water type of movie of, you know, semi-ruthless, like 80s businessman going to rural Scotland to like buy out some land. But like that type of movie would be a completely different type of movie now.
Yes. Yes. Also, I feel like this was back in the day when you could just play like European white people as wild diversity for
totally.
like I'm an American from Texas. These people are outlandishly different from me. These other white people in sweaters.
Yeah.
Which is like a 90s movie version of like, we got to go someplace completely exotic. How about Scotland?
Yeah. And they keep, you know, accusing Peter Reichardt of being Scottish because he has a like mixed something last name. And then he's like, I'm not Scottish. I'm like, well, whatever you are, might as well be. Like, it's not that big of a difference if you're like English or
Scottish.
Yeah, I'm
not Scottish. I'm a Welsh American, you know, fifth generation, you know, whatever. It's like, that's very close, bro.
Yeah. When people are like, well, I'm Finnish. It's like, no, you're not. Shut up.
Yeah, the delineation as an Italian American, I've been hearing my entire life to have so much pride in a place that no one in my family had visited, and no one in my family speaks the language, but we have like this weird like a created culture that they fabricated upon arriving in New York, and we live by. And it's like pride. We have pride in being Italian American, I feel like, which is such a weird vibe.
Totally. And I had to learn about this when I moved out east. I had no idea, sort of outside of just film stereotype, how entrenched it was in just East Coast culture and the extent to which people are walking here and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The casual cursing is the casual swearing is something that I didn't realize was so East Coast that I brought to like when I moved to Los Angeles or when I was on the road, and I would just be talking casually and be like, well, this fucking guy, I don't know. And like at the Dunkin' Donuts or whatever, I'm like, I'm gonna get a fucking Frappuccino or whatever the fuck it's called. And then like people are like taken aback and you're like, oh, right. I'm from not a weird place, but my points of reference from New York are awful. Like I'm that bad stereotype that you see in movies that does actually exist. Like my family and friends are that, you know what I mean? Like people who watch like Don John with JGL and like go like, that's, you know, aspirational.
Like, sure. Yeah. You're like, who is this movie about? And it's like now
my
we
younger
know.
Brother. Luckily he doesn't listen to this podcast or any podcast, but that movie is truly about my brother.
Cool.
Just to jump back to Local Hero, mm-hmm. 1983, I had never seen any of the dude's movies, Bill, not William Forsythe, but Bill Forsythe.
Bill Forsythe. Yeah, I hadn't either. I saw that, like, I've become a big Criterion Channel head, especially in quarantine. And I love when they just sort of toss up, like, here's three movies by this director, four movies by this director. And sometimes I'll know one of those movies if we're lucky. And, like, in this case, I knew that he had adapted Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. I've read that book and I was like, oh, I'd like to watch that movie. I've never seen it, but like, I want to reread the book first. So it was a whole ordeal. So I was like, I'll watch a different one of his. And that's how I got to Local Hero. I was like, well, which of these sounds like something that will get me into the headspace of what this is? But I love, they did it with like Jane Campion. They had a bunch of Mike Lees up there. I love when, wish like other streaming services were better about being like, here's just a bunch from this director, a bunch from this screenwriter. If you just want to get the like sense of someone's career.
Yeah, that it should be. It's so thumbnail based most streaming mm-hmm. sites where it's like it's the same, you know, this woman with amazing cleavage has two lines in this movie, click on, and it's like I would love a grouping that was like, even if it was like these are all shot by Roger Deakins, like just like eight in a row of like that would be such a fun delineation of movies. And totally. Even Netflix has enough Roger Deakins entries, I'm assuming, like just someone like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but it feels like as close as I'll get to like going to like repertory movie theaters during this time who like program out stuff like that, which I yes. always just love because I'm never like, ooh, I want to watch like, you know, I feel like I'm ragging on Netflix. I watch Netflix all the time, but like I'm never like, I want to watch a quirky foreign romantic drama or however.
Yeah,
they
whatever
always
subject
all
lines
those
they
words.
Use. Yes, yes. I know. I'm rarely, and it's supposed to be algorithmic. My wife even has her own separate one. So it, we do have some overlap, but mine is always like, and it's always like gritty, emotional, foreign television or whatever. And I'm like,
amazing,
I just don't
yeah.
know if like, yes, I agree. But also I love Netflix too. But one of the things that drives me crazy is like the conflation of movies and TV. Like I just see something. I'm like, oh, this seems interesting. And I click on, it's like season six new now. I'm like, no, I don't have this in
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, just give me a fucking, I keep finding these random like 100-minute, 110-minute movies they have on there and I'm let down by them, but that's what I'm looking for is like people taking these weird swings and stuff. Bill Forsythe, never heard of the guy. Watched this movie, mm-hmm. looked up his other movies, have full intention now of seeing them. The vibe of this movie, and he's the writer and director, and the vibe of this movie is a very positive vibe. Like a movie that I'm a huge fan of that I kind of tried to, I was trying to come up with like allegories for this movie or like analogs for this movie, and Joe versus the Volcano, which is like one of my favorite movies of all time, and that's very much like got fish out of water guy, but the energy of where it's like, is this a drama, is this a comedy, is this person in on the joke that they're making in this scene, like that, those elements I feel like is what triggered me to really like Local Hero too, and kind of if I'm trying to place it. Did you have a facsimile or something that you could?
Oh gosh, I don't know if I did. I felt like it was really just so unlike anything I had seen just because it took its like, and I don't think it's really like a spoilable movie, but I think like if you think about sort of like, you know, big business guy trying to buy out a small town, we think of that now and we're like, oh, he's going to fall in love with the small town and they're all going to rally to like save this town from the oil company. And I guess like the turn that you find out so quickly is like, this town wants to sell out. Like
yes.
they want to cash in on their land. They're not rich. They all have multiple jobs. This could be like really huge for them. And so you have like the businessman falling in love with the quaint small town and you have the quaint small town being like, please, 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 please pay us millions of dollars to leave our homes. And like that turn felt so unexpected and so realistic to me.
Yes. And then the whole time you're waiting for him to flip back to, like you're still waiting for him to like give a speech where it's like, you don't know what you have here. And like, and then join them and like, fighting the whole time you're like, I'm trying to guess like, well, I know where this is going, and it really never goes where you think it's going.
Yeah, it just sort of like wends its way around this town and what it's like to just sort of be the fish out of water for a long, kind of a long time too, like a couple weeks maybe, or
yeah,
even just like 10 days. Like I also felt like it really sort of, I'm always eager to be made fun of as someone who has spent the better part of like the last 10 years living in like major metropolitan areas, but loves to be like, well, what if I just go out to Montana and like,
oh, yeah,
and move and make candles or something? Like, I need that version of me sort of constantly made fun of. So I don't go do that because that doesn't make sense for me. Like,
I need to be reminded every once in a while of like, yeah, but you need to like work in LA. Like, you do live comedy. You can't just move to a surf town. Like, also, you haven't surfed in 20 years. Like, that's like the reminders. I feel you on this, Fran. I'm very, and like, every movie I see is like, at this point, especially in quarantine, is like, I want to live there. Oh, I want to live like that. This is how I want to live. And it's like, anything seems better than what I'm currently doing in my West Hollywood apartment.
Totally. And it's, yeah, it's this movie about sort of dueling, like, grass is always greener.
Yes, yes, yes.
No one is happy.
Yeah, it's weird. No one is happy, but everyone is kind of happy still. Like, it's not intense. Oh, sorry. It's not to step on you, but it's not intense enough in any direction. Like a newer version of this movie would be like, more, I guess not intense is not the right word, but black and white. It would be more black and white, a modern movie of like, this is what you, the audience, want to happen. This is what the main character wants to happen. This is what the bad guy wants to happen. And in this movie, it's like, who's the bad guy? Who's the main character? And what do I even want? There was no ending I was rooting for, which appealed to me in a way. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, normally I'm like, oh, I hope. Well, I guess besides Peter Capaldi and the hot marine biologist getting together, that was the only thing I was rooting for. And
totally,
they don't even give you that satisfaction. Like, the movie never gives you like the full, like, and in a good way, it never gives you like the full, like, oh, take a breath. This is like, the ending is again unspoilable, but the ending is just so not a movie ending that you would see now in such a cool way.
It's so odd. I do think the reason I picked this of the four sites that I hadn't seen was because of the Capaldi factor.
Yeah.
If I see that guy's in a movie, I'm watching the movie. I don't care what it is. I'll see him do anything.
The whole time.
I love him.
The second he appears on screen, because this movie is from, the early 80s? So I didn't recognize him at first because he's very young. And I'm like, what the fuck? Where do I know this guy? And then I realize he's that dude I'm like, that's a dude who's a doctor. Holy shit. And then he's so... He pops in this movie so hard.
This is his second film.
What?
Yeah, I'm looking now. I love that. I love being on this journey with him.
He's so fucking good in this. It's a fucking meaty role for his second film, too.
No, totally. And I think, like, also now he plays much more, like, rough around the edges. It's very nice to see him just be sort of, I don't know, like, sweet and, like, you know, non-threateningly horny.
Yeah, like a childlike horniness.
Which is the only kind of horniness that is allowed anymore, also. Sort
in
of
movies.
Societally. Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
No, yeah. The only time you're allowed to be horny is if you are the Star-Lord and your girlfriend who's green, you can, like, make a one-liner about, and then that's sexuality.
I feel so sad for the children being raised on this versus like me seeing something I shouldn't have seen and then that awakening a different thing inside me, you know?
Yeah, I can't believe none of these people are seeing, I was like, just going to be way too real about this moment in a film that affected me permanently. No one's going to catch Blown Away, the Nicole Eggert and Corey Feldman one on HBO any afternoon. But this young boy had a VHS tape, taped it and changed his fucking childhood.
Wow.
Features pouring orange juice on a woman's chest as an act of sexuality, which feels like it should have been champagne or something in hindsight, but I feel like the OJ was the upsetting
count is kind of crazy on that.
Yeah, I'm trying to be low carb these days.
I feel like we turned on juice like really quickly. Societally, it was just like we were all in on juice and now we hate juice.
Juice might as well be a fucking soda, according to a lot. Like, you might, if you're.
This is the thing. But maybe soda will come back. I like soda.
Fingers crossed. We didn't have sodas in our house growing up. We were like a water family. And I told people that, like, oh, your parents are like health nuts. And I was like, no. I can't place it. And eventually my wife was like, you think it was because you guys were poor that your parents convinced you that water was the best? And we were like, oh my God, yeah. And I didn't even know. I was just like, people were like, you were healthy? I was like, no, I've been overweight my whole life. My mom too. And it's like, oh no, we just didn't have soda in the house.
We did, but it was only for my mother. My mom could drink Coca-Cola.
What?
None of the rest of us could in the house. Out of the house kind of rules out the window, but this, my mom would have one Coca-Cola every day, still does.
Wow. And at dinner and stuff, you would be, like, if you were out at a restaurant, you'd be allowed to have a soda.
Yeah. Which was like, you know, once a month or something like that. But even now I go home as an adult, not recently, obviously, but like, I'm like, can I have a Coca-Cola? And my mom's like, who do you think you are?
Mom's like, I'm not going to the grocery store for 22 days. There are 22 cans in there. I am not, you're not messing up my count here.
She's like, if you want soda in the house, you can go buy that yourself. Like, it's not family soda. It's for her.
Well, gee, crazy. Thanks, Mom. I'll grab soda on the way from the airport.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. So the main dude in this movie is a guy who I recognize from a, but I couldn't, he's one of those guys whose name I couldn't tell you at the time, but I just know him as the Jewish guy from Animal House, which is like probably not how you're supposed to describe actors anymore.
He also had a very familiar face to me, but I actually don't think I've seen Peter Reigert in anything. I've never seen Animal House.
Oh, wow.
I know.
And he's also a character in the movie The Mask, like a small, he's like one of the cops.
That might be it.
That's a movie I saw 100 times, and I can't remember one thing from it right at this moment. And I have no desire to rewatch it.
Have, like, I think half watched the Ewan McGregor American Pastoral adaptation that doesn't exist, and I feel like I've definitely seen some of him from that. And at some point, I'm gonna full watch it, but like that could be 10 years from now.
That I give you credit. Oh, and he was, I guess he's in Kimmy Schmidt is a more recent credit than but I didn't watch that. Don't tell anyone.
I'm not going to say a word.
Please keep that between us. I can't have Ellie Kemper find that out. Yeah. And he's great in it.
He's amazing.
He's so charming. I care so much about this guy, and he's not that warm at any point. Like, he's not that extra sympathetic like a character in one of these movies would be.
He's kind of pathetic.
Yeah, and he's not like written to be like for us to be like thinking and caring about him the whole time, but you just start to because we're on him for so much that you're just like, oh, I hope. And you even like, I hope he gets the sale. I hope he doesn't ruin these people's lives. And then at the end, you're like miffed when like, you're like, oh man. And I'm like, wait, what did I even care? I guess I'm so used to movies and especially current movies and maybe even the way I watch them now is like, I know what I think is going to happen. And I like am prepared for it. And then a movie like this, where I'm like, I don't even know what I want to happen. Just like kind of breaks me in a fun way where I'm
the whole time
I couldn't guess the next scene, not because they're taking huge swings, but just because it doesn't follow a traditional, like modern fucking like, narrative arc for like giving a shit about this hero. Like there's no real romance. Even like later on at the end of the movie, he's like, I'm in love with your girlfriend or whatever. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah. It's like, she's just a girl who's around. But I think that's his sort of thing also, is he's also so unexposed to women generally that like, he's like, I'm in love with every girl. He's like, right before he goes on the trip to Scotland, he like calls up his secretary from one room over and he's like, do you want to get lunch before I go on a business trip? She's like, no.
Yeah.
Like,
and he called a few people and then eventually it's like, right, he's like asking for like old shit he left at their house and stuff. Like,
yeah,
he's clearly desperate.
Long suffering ex girlfriend or whatever.
I told you to stop calling me. Oh yeah, that adds another layer to the movie too. And he doesn't seem to have respect at the office either. So he,
no,
and he, but he does have money. We do know he has a Porsche, and he has he makes $88,000 a year in early '80s money. That's in Houston.
That's
early
'80s.
That's fucking, you know, that's palace money.
Yeah, but he has that whole like middle management complex of like, if you gave me that setup, I'd be fine for the rest of my life. And he's like, but this is not good enough for me.
Yeah.
And it has that whole like consultant, like business person mindset of like, he should be so satisfied, and he's so deeply unhappy with what he has. and thinks that maybe like this is the sale that does it. But that's always the thing with these people is like every sale is the one that's going to be the one that
makes
life complete.
I mean, you can say that about almost any like occupation, because even like freelance, I don't have like an enriching job, but like my job was like, okay, doing this guest star in Brooklyn Nine-Nine is what's going to finally make me happy in life. And it's like, oh, weird. That didn't happen. I guess the next guest star is going to be the thing that fixes me. And none of it does. It's just like, it's what I think. And then in hindsight, I'm going to look back and be like, doing my podcast was the heart of it all the entire time or whatever.
Hell like, yes. Yeah. It's all going to come down to talk radio.
I've been talking about this a little bit lately, but I'm so old that my college major has the word radio in the title. I majored in radio, TV, film. And I thought it was so dumb. We mocked it. And now 20 years after I've graduated, 16 years after I've graduated, I'm back around to working in radio.
It's back, baby. It's back in a major way.
I'm finally using my college major. I'm so glad I went into debt that I paid off up 2 years ago in order to
mazel,
do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to a very small college that did not respect TV and film. And I keep wondering, like, I wonder when they're going to start respecting TV and film. I was like, we had to do like a senior thesis project. And I was like, I really want to write a screenplay. And they were like, it's not art.
Oh,
jeez. You have to write a regular play.
Now
and I was like, it's not
art.
That different.
Beetlejuice like, on Broadway, art. Screenplays, not art.
Yeah, and I'm just sort of like, well, it's been, you know, almost a decade now. Like, are they going to start being like, TV and film is art? But it seems like no.
It's about to flip. Like, where TV and art, TV and movies aren't going to be art. It's going to be like, I majored in content.
Oh God. Yeah, well they have media studies, but that's all like I think that's more
about it.
Yeah, but it's not reading it sort of as like a text.
Right.
Every movie I watched in college, I watched in a history class because the history department was obsessed with film. They were like, this is sort of like what we actually have as like living documents of how people thought about things. And it's my like freak liberal arts college's fault that I'm obsessed with Clint Eastwood, because they were just like, get a load of whatever this guy's on about every major historical event.
As I say, that's so funny. It's like, this is Letters from Iwo Jima. Yeah, check this out. This is called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, you just keep getting weirder and weirder. Your history teacher's like, today we're going to learn about the Scorpio killer in San Francisco. It's like, huh? It's like,
yeah, and now I'm an adult woman who's obsessed with Clint. So,
hey,
it's like,
I'm obsessed with Clint as well. The guy's got it. We just watched In the Line of Fire for the Action Boys podcast as our election day special.
I haven't seen.
Ooh,
good?
Malkovich and Clint Eastwood with Rene Russo as a love interest. The age difference at least is mentioned on camera by actors, so you can at least blow, at least someone says something. That's my biggest. These movies now, rewatching. I watch a lot of 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s action movies from my other podcasts, and they're just the politics and the social dynamics and the gender dynamics in these movies is brutal. It's just insane. It's like every time I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this is what I watch. Like, I watch movies like this every day from the ages of like 12 to 20. I no wonder why I was fucked up for so many years.
Oh. My friend Jeff has a very simple tweet that's like, I think the internet really messed me up, that I just think about with like, it's like, yep, it doesn't get more simple than that. I think about that every day.
Yeah, it's 100% true and very succinct when you put it like that, Jeff. Mm-hmm. That is so fucking true. We're coming up on almost a full year of not having to wear hard pants. We've been wearing sweats. We get to dress lazy. We're working from home, a lot of us, ideally. And I'll tell you what, I'm in Mack Weldon's every day, and not just underwear. Now that the weather's turning a little colder, I'm rocking their sweatpants, their soft knit polos, the tees, the joggers. They're all, I guess joggers and sweatpants are the same thing, but I wanted to use the cool slang. I love my Mack Weldon pants. They don't make me look like a slob when I run to the grocery store in them, and they keep me comfortable as hell. And no, waistband, but it feels good to have a soft, elastic waistband in the quarantine. So get yourself on Mack Weldon. They have all different kinds of fabrics, and they have this new thing. It's relatively new. You've probably heard about it on a few ads, but the Weldon Blue, which is a totally free loyalty program. Level 1 gets you shipping for life. Level 2 gets you 20% off your order for the next year, which you get to by spending $200. I highly recommend Mack Weldon for your underwear and socks, and some of their outerwear stuff is great too. It's comfortable, and if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep them and they'll still refund you. And then on top of that, you can get 20% off your first order. So visit MackWeldon.com/high, H-I-G-H, and enter promo code HIGH. That's MackWeldon.com/high, promo code HIGH for 20% off. Mack Weldon, reinventing men's basics. But this movie felt like an 80s movie because of its energy behind business. I feel like so many 80s movies I grew up watching was like businessman was just like enough of a description for your character to like, and you understood that they cared about money. They were maybe career focused. They were maybe shallow. Maybe that like it was such a shorthand. And then this movie hits you with this opening shorthand where you're like, I get this. And then he goes like, once he arrives in Scotland, the first three things that happen are like things I've never seen in real life or movies before. So like, I don't even know they stop at like the oil laboratory that's inside the pool. Like, and like,
yeah, there's an amazing model.
Yes. The location scout, like the fucking set design of this room. So it's like a weird, like a reconfigured indoor pool. Like it's like a spa that they turned into a set for a moment. Like a hot springs, like one of those kind of places, like a Turkish bath. And then they built like a little fucking model of the town. And then they're sort of standing by doing experiments that are so complex and you don't even really understand what he's there for yet. And all the information that's just like pouring out is, you're just like, I was so taken aback by this room. I was like, they have to come back to this. This thing seems so important and wild.
And they never do.
And they never do. Yeah.
It's such a cool set. And it's like, why does it feel so like funny that he thinks he needs to understand the science to make this deal.
Right.
That this is going to help him, when it's like, I don't even know what they were really talking about in that scene. And he definitely doesn't either.
Yeah, and they make it seem like maybe they're lying a little bit about, because, or at least they don't want the marine biologist. Man, beautiful female marine biologist. That's a weird movie trope,
cool.
Right? But isn't that like a thing that would end up, I couldn't place another movie, but I feel like
it's a movie fake job.
Yes.
Like in that architect, you'll never see more architects than you do in on screen. Like no one knows any real architects.
Tons of architects, not a lot of people building these buildings, but a hell of a lot of people in Hollywood designing them inside the world.
Absolutely.
Got all these plans and I know what women want. There's only a, well, that was advertising, right?
Yeah.
Another tropic job. I did like that her reveal in this movie is like a classic male gaze, like, I'm a brilliant scientist, but now it's time for me to dive into the pool. And you're like, okay. And, but the 80s, and I'm assuming British, or, you know, the POV of like, she's in a one piece and it's more about the fact that she can hold her breath for a long time. That's like my idea of sexy, of like, yes, she's a genius and also weirdly a stud athlete. Like that's me.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
That we worked on me so hard.
We don't have like a horny shot of her getting out of the pool. Exactly. It's like horny shot of her staying down in the water a long time. It's like, and she's so competent and she's beautiful.
Yeah. And we get that cute, fun moment between Capaldi and the other, and Reichert, where they're like, Reichert, where they're fighting over who gets to give her her lab coat back in that moment. And it's such a small, like, male, and then you think, oh, that's the rivalry of this, like, and my brain goes, oh, okay, they're gonna be vying for this woman or whatever. Reichert never mentions that he likes, what's his name in the movie, McIntyre, right? Mac never mentions he likes her again. And then the next sequence is they have to stop because of the fog and go to sleep in their car.
And they're like eating snacks. Yes. It's very weird. They're like,
they have an injured rabbit in the back seat.
They have an injured rabbit that's in the middle of the road. They have this like older brother, younger brother type of relationship. Like Capaldi's meant to be like Mac's counterpart, but I think just in this, the scale of like the companies and the countries, he takes on this very sweet subservient role.
Yeah, I would
he's just
assume,
like, whatever
like,
you say.
Yeah, I would assume at an oil company, like the Houston office is the alpha office.
Yeah,
is my guess. So like, and Capaldi's like, yeah, I'm probably the same job as you, but it's in Scotland, so it's less of a thing here. It's not like we don't live in oil country or whatever. But the dynamic is so unusual, and the idea of just sleeping in a car with a dude that you just met that day, like work, that's an insane fucking.
Yeah.
And they don't, and they're just kind of like, oh, it's, well, the fog lifted. Let's go off to town.
Like business trips sure are weird sometimes.
Yes.
Like I did back when I was doing stand up like years ago, I would do some traveling, but not like extensive touring. I don't know what sort of like a business trip really feels like. And that to me is so strange. Like the per diem feels very bizarre. And this is like my brother's in this field. This is like his whole life pre-pandemic was just like, I travel 4 or 5 days a week. Like I'm always gone. I live off the per diem. Like it's so strange to me. And like has all these like friendships with people who don't live in the same city with him, but he sees more regularly than his friends who live in the same city as him.
Right. And then it's like, oh, you know, twice a month I'm in this town and I'm getting blasted with this person who is kind of like my work. I see these 2 days a month, but I spend 6 hours. Like, what are we doing next? You know, next time you're in town, because there's an element of the travel where you're like, well, I'm not home. I might as well see the local chain restaurant or whatever. And as someone who's toured for comedy and then had some work travel, I know the excitement of it being paid for and the excitement. And as someone who's been cohabitating with my wife and or this woman for 15 years. The hotel life, and I'm assuming that's kind of part of the businessman thing of like in these movies is like the patriarch getting away and living as like away from the nagging wife and the annoying kids. And you kind of like, it's the only place I could be totally quote unquote alone. You know what I mean? You go on these business trips and you're sort of like, yeah, I guess I'll walk down and, you know, maybe I'll have two coffees today. And like, or you're like, develop these habits where you're like, oh, whenever I'm on tour, I go for a nice walk around the neighborhood and find a good Salvation Army and shop for fatigues or whatever, you know? And it's like, you develop these like sort of like work travel personality or traits.
Yeah.
Where like,
this like self out of context.
Yes.
Where oh, it's like, you're truly, truly free.
Yeah. You're unmoored. You're you don't have your responsibilities that you have necessarily. Or even when you go home, it's not like, well, I should bang out these dishes or like, oh, yeah, I got to get back to do blank. It's like your singular focus is like work and yourself. And it's kind of like that weird, me and my wife talk about it all the time because she travels for work and so do I. And we explain, like, we say that's why our marriage works is because like we each get time apart from each other, but also time alone in our own apartment, like the tiny apartment we share. So that element of like traveling, there's the whole other side to it, which it doesn't pertain at all to this film, but now I'm just on this tangent of like your partner traveling or your roommate traveling or someone traveling allows you to like, now I'm home in out of context. My apartment is out of context or my living situation is out of context.
I mean, I think I had that this past summer. My roommate went home for like 2 months. And so then I was really just like solo in the apartment for 2 whole months, which is a very strange self. And I had lived alone back when I lived in Chicago, but that, you know, that was a totally different type of lifestyle. And now then I was just sort of this past summer, just really solo doing some work, but not a ton of work. And I was like, God,
it was pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a brave time to have to try to live alone for the first, like for the first, or not try to, but like to have to live alone if you were in a roommate person leading up to
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And this was like mid-July through mid-September. And like, I fought a whole war against mice. Like I just learned a lot about myself.
Why am I picturing you fully Castaway for some reason? Like,
I mean, it kind of was.
You have like a lighter and bug spray chasing rats around and shit.
I had to really confront death in my fear and just my general fear of mice. So it was sort of a crazy summer for me. But yeah, but I also sort of developed these, you know, like, okay, I'm going to go on my little walks. And like, I think we see Mac do this in the movie where he starts just like, because, you know, the deal gets like stalled out. And then he's just like, oh, I'm going to walk along the beach and try to find some shells.
Yeah. And I love the business casual. As someone who's grew up in the Northeast and now lives in Southern California, but was a beach bum and a beach person, I don't know a lot about these like cold coastal beaches, you know, like your Maines and your PNWs and your Scotland. This to me was so beautiful to see the beach, but also everyone is in sweaters and dress pants and boots and like walking around the sand. To me, that was like such an unusual thing to have like casual,
it's so weird,
freezing
yeah.
cold beachfront property. And I was so envious of the fact, going back to what you were saying earlier, Fran, about I'll go to Montana and dip wicks or whatever for a living. Ben's life in this movie is like I want that dude Ben's life. He's like, no, I collect shit that comes up on the beach and I just live this little hut. I was like, a dream fucking come true.
I love to live in this town.
Yes,
I'd love to work at the inn. It'd be so nice. Sure, I'll bartend 7 days a week. Who gives a shit? Like, right. Sounds amazing. But that's also, you know, I'll go raise some goats or something. Like, I can't be allowed to like drift too far into this fantasy world because I'll totally...
I'm almost 40. I don't know how to change a tire. I'm completely soft. Like, but I dream of like being this rugged. I would love to have a garden where it's like, have you ever I'm like, no, I haven't had a yard since I was like 15 years old. Like, like, but I'm so ready to be a guy who's like, oh yeah, I just like live off the land. You know, it's like people are like, you order Postmates 4 days a week, Gabrus. It's like, oh yeah, fair.
I'm lucky to get one new skill a year at this point. And it's usually because someone has like forced me to do it. Circumstance dictates.
My new skill every year is some new technology that's like weirdly important for my job out of nowhere. Like this year it was Zoom. The year before it was Dropbox. The year before that it was like social media. Like every year I'm like this. Unfortunately, that I was a late adopter to that. I was like, I guess I got to do this eventually.
Yeah, I learned how to use a drill. This is my new skill.
Oh shit, that's not my skill set. That's my wife's department. Hanging this stuff, house stuff. That's all her.
This is hanging stuff, finding beams. This is like
stud finding
all this. When I moved into my new place, my roommate had a friend come up and I was like, oh, the boys will do the difficult tasks for me. And then I very quickly learned this is not what guys are doing for girls anymore. This is chivalry is dead. Now the new thing is guys being like, no, you are empowered enough to learn to do this yourself. And they kept joking about my neuroplasticity. They're like, it would actually be really good for your neuroplasticity if you learned how to do something yourself. And I was getting so mad because I was like, I don't want to be smart forever. I want someone to hang my 40-pound mirror for me. But I did it. I did it myself.
I'm going to definitely be using this. I'm like, honestly, Tiff, I think you can learn to handle this on your own, babe. I think this
I'm
is going to be important for you.
Neuroplasticity. Like, I guess it's real, but like I'd rather do a Sudoku than learn a new task at this point if it's going to extend my life.
I am about I just did a friend's podcast talking exclusively about longevity because that shit has been on my mind, and especially in the quarantine I feel my mind like whatever the opposite of developing a little bit is. atrophying a little bit. And here's something, because talking movies, and it's a sad year for movies. A lot of everything's postponed. You can't go to the theater, which is like ideally the best. The rep theaters you're talking about. We got our New Beverly's, your Nighthawks, your Alamos and all that. Bummer, bummer, bummer. But also I'm having a harder time. And I think it's because it's very easy to focus on a movie in a theater. I'm having a harder time. Movies are something I love. I kind of have to do them for work sometimes, like watch them. And I have all the time in the world, and I still can't sit down and like always truly just sit down and focus on a movie. And I'm like embarrassed by that. It's like such a low bar of like attention. Forget reading a book. Forget fucking writing something. I can't even like not look at my phone for 2 hours. Well, I can't even. I saw going off random tweets. You remembered someone tweeted. It's like, this weekend I'm going to treat myself to being distracted by my small screen while watching my large screen as a reward for taking care of my medium screen all week long. And I'm like, oh my God, that hits so fucking hard. And I'm embarrassed.
No, it's impossible. I keep trying to find strategies to like make it easier, make it better. Like I watch a ton of stuff, but I don't always have great focus. And really it just comes down to like recognizing before I hit play on something, like, is this something I'm going to watch or is this something I'm going to half watch? And then trying not to half watch something I would love to be full watching.
Making the decision before you press play of like, is this going to be something I watch while I look at my phone, play Switch, or try to type something up, and this is just on in the background? Or is this like, put my phone in another, like in a fucking lockbox, and I'm going to sit here and give that, because that's why with like talking about Local Hero on the podcast, this felt like an assignment from someone who's, you know, like my cool sibling who's like, Gabrus, you should watch this movie. So I was so happy to sit down and watch it. And I'm like, put my phone in the other room and then I'm watching it. And I'm like, oh, it's great. What's this guy's name? What is that guy's name? He's the Doctor Who. Fuck. All right, pause it. What's his name? Peter Capaldi. Oh, Instagram. Oh, so, okay, women lift weights. Okay, oh, people go swimming. Oh, okay. The next thing I know, I'm like, oh, my God, the sun is down. My wife's like, what do you want to do for dinner? And I'm like, fuck, I have to watch this fucking movie. Something I want to do and I can't bring myself to it.
Well, and we just don't have the, like, little routine of prep of just, like, going to the movies. Like, it was so fun to, like... I was always watching stuff on streaming, but it was nice to have the balance of that and like the theater experience. And like, I was lucky when I lived in Chicago, I lived within walking distance of two theaters I really loved. And like back when I was in Jersey City, I was like, I don't know, a 25-minute walk away from the AMC. Very easy to just go see, you know, whatever shit was at the AMC. And like to have even just like 20 minutes to get yourself into the headspace of like, I'm going to the movies. Now it's like, oh, I have the headspace of walking 10 feet to the living room.
Right. And your computer is always there. Your phone is like, you're like, I'm not going to shut my phone off while I watch a movie at home, but maybe I'll do that at the theater. Of course. I get why real wealthy movie heads eventually build like theaters in their home. I get it now. I want a screening room. I want a room where I go in and it's like, the Wi-Fi sucks in here. It's like, I know, right? Like,
that would rock.
Yeah. It's concrete walls. You just go in, it's dark and you can get snacks and you could, the only rule change would be you're allowed to smoke weed in my screening room, unlike the ArcLight. But you
seems great.
Yeah. I miss my whole process of get into the ArcLight, 15, 20 minutes before the movie starts, smoking in my car, walking downstairs, getting a smoothie or a green tea or a coffee. So I don't get
very, very LA of you.
I know. Well, for a while, the ArcLight and my gym was in the same building. I've since switched gyms and since foregone gyms completely. But when for a while I'd be like a Wednesday afternoon, I'd have nothing going on. I'd be like, all right, here's my plan. Go to the gym at like 10 a.m., work out, get done, smoke weed, drink a protein shake, and then, or bring a protein shake in with me to a movie and sit sweating like in my workout clothes and just watch a full fucking movie and be like, all right, yeah, I'm just going to go see Birds of Prey alone. You know what I mean?
Hell
like,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. I miss that. So I went to the movie solo so much. I saw a lot of my close male friends and female friends, but a lot of I have like, oh, the new Star Wars movie's out. That's who I go see that with these people. Oh, this dumb action movie's out. I got to go try to see this movie with this person. Like, I have that kind of mentality, and I've lost that, and I've lost, like, seeing those people and shit. It feels great.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the last movie I saw stoned, and I think it was, like, in the theater. And I think it was Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman, a terrible film.
Which would maybe be one of the last movies you saw in the theater, period,
definitely,
right? Because that was the one I got invited to the screening in downtown L.A. at the Alamo, and it's just too far from my house, slash it was like, you know, as COVID was like, as I was starting to hear about it, and I'm like, maybe I won't go to this movie because it's also Guy Ritchie's The Gentleman. I'm not like stressing about getting there, but it is McConaughey, who's like an idol of mine, Charlie Hunnam, who's my wife's crush, who I put on every one of her birthday cards, and it's about weed, so I should have wanted to see it, but Guy Ritchie's burned me too many times.
Oh, and he'll burn you hard on this one. I was so grateful to be as high as I was because I was like, I'm not mad. I just feel like I'm going to have a stroke with all the information my brain is trying to process watching this. Hunnam is really great in it, is what I'll say. But
because they let him use a British accent, right?
Yeah.
I think that's his downfall, is that he's always like, just let him play British in movies for fuck's sake. Like as someone who watched all of Sons of Anarchy, like he needs to just not worry about his American accent. He had 100 hour long episodes to get it right. Never happened. Fuck it. Let's just do, just be British. Just
sort
be British.
Inspirational. If it wasn't his job, you'd be like, that's inspirational. Like he did something 100 times and he still sucks at it. Like that's beautiful.
I know. And it was his job. And I watched it all. So did he really suck? Like mission accomplished. He got 6-7 seasons of that show with
more.
I can't do the impression until right after I hear it, but I used to be able to do it. Be like Opie. I can't. I'm going to fuck it up now.
I don't know who any of this is a show that I feel like has had like no lasting cultural impact.
You are correct. It's wild how a lot of people have seen it, but no one talks about it. You know
no.
what I mean?
Yeah.
It has no staying power. The first season is truly enjoyable in a way that that an FX drama can do. And then by the second season, they're like in Ireland trying to return, like kidnap what? Back a baby from like a Catholic nunnery. And you're
what
like,
the fuck?
It gets so deep so fast.
God
the gang,
damn it.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I'm out. Because I remember looking at my wife and being like, this is weird, right? And she's like, yeah. Okay, well, there's only 3 more seasons. Let's just finish.
Just 3 to go. Wow. Bizarre. Ugh. What a show.
I haven't watched a movie not high in a long time. Mm. I feel like, and California allows that. And, you know, I'm sort of gross with it anyway. But have you any hacks of movies or streaming services or styles in which you watch movies at home that have upped your enjoyment, or how have you tried to bring your, you know, I'll give you an example of something my wife and I do while you think. We've been doing sort of more like kind of themed nights, like where we plan what we choose a movie or a dinner based on the movie or the dinner we want to have. Like, oh, let's watch Goodfellas and eat pasta and drink red wine or whatever. It's like we've been doing more of that just to feel something to look forward to. We do like Friday night burgers and like, oh, let's do nachos and watch this Netflix comedy show. Like we try to make these weird pairings just to have events at the house. And we're just starting Sopranos. So we're thinking Christmas Eve, we might try to make 7 fishes because it's just the two of us. Just make 7 fishes and watch Sopranos all night and day. I was like, all right, time to make a tradition. Like,
sounds amazing. I think we're going to do Sopranos in the new year. I've seen it. My new roommate has not seen it. So I think we're going to do the sweep. Some theme nights, having some like kind of communal watch lists is really nice. Like I have 2 different sort of like my roommate and I sort of have an ongoing one where we just sort of alternate picks off of it. If we're like, we have nothing to do, like let's pick whoever didn't pick last time picks this one off this big list we have. Then I have 2 different group chats. One that is just very like good at being like, I'm in this mood, what should I watch? And usually someone on that group chat will really deliver. And then I'm a big Jude Law guy, so I have my Jude Law group chat where like we all have not seen the same Jude Law films, so it's usually like, okay, what Jude should I watch?
I rewatched Talented Mr. Ripley like a month ago. That movie is so fucking good.
It's incredible. It's an incredible movie. It always hits. It's always what I want to watch. That's sort of a perpetual rewatch for me. I taught like a fiction into film class this past summer. And
oh, cool.
I was like, it was awesome. But I was really stressed that like the students who are like, you know, 18, 19, 20, like they are not going to want to watch anything that's not from the last 5 years, which I find to be true of just like teen taste in general.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of like super contemporary stuff. But then I was like, I love The Talented Mr. Ripley as a novel. It's like super quick. It's like 200 pages, like it was like the oldest thing I taught, and I was like, I'm so scared they're gonna be like, I hate this, I don't care about this. I was like,
Grandma Fran, what are you making us watch here? Yeah.
I was like, do teens care about Matt Damon? And they were like, they were obsessed with it. They loved it. And I was so happy.
That's always really fun when one of these movies you know to be like, I mean, this is objectively a good movie. I'm comfortable saying something like that. It's like, let's bring it to these kids, like the ultimate arbiters. You said something funny there. when I was a teen, we talk about this on Action Boys a lot. It's like, oh, I didn't watch that movie because it was like yellowish. And like, it was like, there's so, you know, as a child of the 80s and 90s, if a movie was from the 70s and it had like a yellowish tint or a dusty, like what, I would like write it off as like, oh, it looked like the old Doctor Who or BBC shit. And I'd be like, ew, no. And then it wasn't until like, now I can't. I only want to watch like weird yellow old dusty films. I don't want to watch fucking polished, you know, all shot on a green psych with like digital moving backgrounds and shit. That I don't want to watch anymore. But it is that period of time where I can imagine being 16 or 17 and someone being like, this is called The Talented Mr. Ripley, and being like, ugh, they're in Europe. Gross.
And it's, oh God.
Talk about like a movie that you want to like throw away your cosmopolitan life for. Like, I want to live where, and I'm a huge Damon fan. I've never been a real big Jude Law fan. I've nothing against him, but rewatching that movie and after having rewatched The Holiday, because one of my to-do lists is I'm listening to Blank Check Out of Order as these movies that I'm inspired to watch. And I'm like, oh, they did do a Nora Ephron one. So I watched The Holiday, listened to your episode. And then I was like, oh, now I rewatched fucking Talented Mr. Ripley after rewatching that. And I'm like, shit, Jude Law is fucking good. He doesn't do enough. And then I watched Contagion like at the top of the fucking pandemic.
Evil blogger Jude Law.
Evil. I mean, that movie got so much shit right, except that 61% of America would be Jude Law instead of just one dude. That was the only thing they got wrong.
Yeah, I should rewatch that, but that, I was living in Chicago when they were shooting there.
Oh, cool.
And so everyone had I feel like so many people I knew had like stories about running into them shooting Contagion stuff. I haven't revisited. I feel like it'll hit too close to home. But
it's not for everybody.
I admire everyone who like March 20th was like, it's time to rewatch Contagion. I was like, definitely not.
It should be said that they like reveal in the third act that the foundation, like how the virus was first created, was like between a bat and a pig in China, in a wet market.
Gwyneth eats the pig.
Yeah, she eats it from the.
I saw it in theaters, and I was like, "Good thing nothing bad will ever happen."
Yeah, good thing I don't have to worry about anything like this. But watching it, it's just so crazy. It's like you see like people wipe their nose, and like they do like that Soderbergh slow mo of like be grossed out by this small, and you're like, now it feels insane to watch. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I can't do it.
Wait, back to Talented Mr. Ripley, just because I want to live in that world. Like shoes, short shorts, the beach, like I'm dream come true.
All his like mesh collared shirts. I really love white shorts, the jazz. It's so like
Italiano. I can't think of that movie without thinking of that song. I fucking watched that scene so many times.
Oh, and he's being such a jerk. He's like, I think I want to learn to play drums. Like, he's such an annoying, specific type of guy. It's such a funny, funny, funny performance. And like, and what I'll say, like teaching that book is like that character is not half as interesting in the book as like what Jude brings to it.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Top tier Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie.
Amazing. Amazing.
God level fucking. When he walks in on Tom dancing in Jude's clothes, when he walks in on and he's like, that and the bathtub scene, two of the most awkward, dynamic, like fucking between amazing performers sequences in that movie. I mean, there's tons.
Those scenes are gutting. Like they're so hard to watch. It's like I feel true pain.
Yeah,
watching
like,
them.
Just getting trapped in that lie, you feel like such a child. I feel like I have flashbacks to like I'm not in elaborate scam lies anymore. The only people that were ever dealing with that were like my parents. Mm-hmm. So like I feel like so infantile when I watch someone paint themselves into a corner via lies. Like, well, just trust me on this one. You just have to, like, I just feel like a kid and it gives me such cringe of like knowing my parents are just, I like can have an astral projection of my childhood where my parents are like, this kid is lying. What do we do? He's obviously lying. And I'm like, you don't understand. The kid behind me took the paper and he was the one who wrote the dirty word. It's like all this shit. And I'm like, I can't believe I was so embarrassed that I was like that desperate to like lie and not get in trouble as a child.
No, I get it. And like what that movie I think does to me every time I watch it is like, I know how it's going to end every single time. And I'm like, maybe he's going to get away with it. Like, I do convince myself, I think out of some degree of empathy or like connectivity, I'm like, oh, he's not a psycho. He's awkward. But it's like, he's both. He can be both.
Yeah, you're allowed to be both. Yeah. You're allowed to be struggling with your sexual identity and also an absolute piece of shit.
Like, totally. And that is bisexual culture to a T. And that is sort of my people, what I connect to.
That's what I took away from the film.
Yeah. What's been amazing about the pandemic is every 2 weeks, someone still tweets something insane about being bisexual. Like, as if I'm like, who's even caring about this? No one's asking anyone to weigh in on this. And yet I have to see it.
Thanks for the reminder, fam.
Yeah. It's like, who's getting mad about this right now?
Yeah, who's like, this is an issue that's currently forefront in my mind. I just looked around America and I thought one of the things I really needed to talk about right now was this.
Yeah.
Just eyeballing the country. I think a big thing is let's really hash out what it means to be bisexual. Me and a straight person deciding this.
Like, yeah.
No. It seems you're missing the forest for the trees there, fam. Fran, before we get out of here, I would like to abuse your knowledge and taste. Mm-hmm. Can I have a reco for a Jude Law movie? Like, some of the ones that I've seen and enjoyed were, is it Closer? Is that the Clive?
Yeah. Closer's a crazy movie.
Yeah. So Closer, I've seen AI, do you have a performance of Jude's that if someone was like, I'm not sure if I love this dude as an actor, you'd be like, oh, then you have to see blank. Do you have a pitch in that world?
The ones I always go for are Ripley, AI, I think Spy. Have you seen Spy?
No.
Oh, wait,
is that the one with Melissa McCarthy?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He is.
I love him in Spy. I also, like, this is very topical, but like, he was in this movie that just came out on demand called The Nest that like premiered at Sundance this year. Might be a big awards play this year. It's him and Carrie Coon. Having a bad time in the 80s. And
okay.
Like bad middle management business guy in the 1980s.
Okay. All right. That's a new movie. That's another thing that makes it exciting. Like, it was one thing, local hero, new to me, but like a new movie that I can be excited to watch. This is what a fucking dream.
Watched it this past week, and I like, we don't get a lot of contemporary Jude outside of like Captain Marvel or like the Harry Potter shit, which I am kind of like whatever about, but this is sort of like, oh, Jude still has it.
I knew he would. Oh, that's exciting. And we should say to listeners, this pod, highly recommend Local Hero. That was a delightful film watch. And the one other actor I recognized from only one other thing is the bartender, who's like the third lead of this movie or the fourth lead of this movie, is Wedge Antilles from Star Wars.
Oh, wow. Had no idea.
Like, yeah. No, I mean, he's not a major character in Star Wars, except in like the extended universe fan fiction, like writing about it. But I only know him from the card game, but it is funny to see him. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess he was a British actor. He must have done more than just a one-line role in Star Wars.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even talk about Burt Lancaster. Burt Lancaster's amazing in this, obviously. Yes.
Well, it's funny because the reason we didn't talk about him is because he's never in the same spot as our main characters in this movie. He's always a phone actor. We see him in his crazy office. Oh, with his running gag that he has, like, his therapist is training him to handle criticism and roasting.
Mm-hmm. By just being so mean to him all the time to make him stronger. And he's, like, obsessed with the stars.
Yes.
Sort of astrology king, Burt Lancaster. Zany performance. Very strange.
Wild over there. And he rolls up eventually to Scotland at the end. And that's a very fun... What a weird... The side games that his character... Like, his side plots... This is such an 80s movie where they just apply. It's like every time we cut to this guy, he's going to have this insane dynamic. You know what I mean? Like the thing about him is he's like, and it's so I was wrapping up the podcast 5 minutes ago. Now I'm back to the sorry friend.
No, it's good. We're going to get through it. I really have faith. I just was like, Burt Lancaster is me if I sort of owned a big company, which is that I'd be like, oh, I guess I'm obsessed with space now. You know,
I'd die to be the rich CEO of a company where the whole company is like, Yeah, he loves the beach. Just deal with it. He's going to make us do the company picnic's going to be at the beach. It's going to be like he's going to keep talking about the power of waves and all these big town halls. Just ignore him. Like I'm so ready to be. God help me if I ever fucking sell a show and I get to be the showrunner and just shrink that small power down to like I'm trying to think of the only time I'd ever be a CEO. And that is even super far fetched. But if that's the case, God help everyone on my staff where it's like, yeah, we have to take our first meeting on a fucking longboard because Johnny here.
That rocks. That rocks.
We would just be full blown Burt Lancaster. I guess it's also a marking of like what our current lives are. It's like that any movie, I'm just like, I want to live there. It's like the favelas in like a Brazilian crime drama. I'm like, yes, put me there. Put me there. Before we do plugs, I just watched a Norwegian sort of action thriller survival drama based on a true story on Netflix called The 12th Man that I enjoyed a lot.
The 12th Man? Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm adding it to my watch list.
Yeah, it's a very it's unfortunately one of those movies you can't half watch. I've learned subtitles make it very difficult to half watch a movie. So frequently I'm like, oh, I'll throw this on while I play, and I'm like, oh yeah, maybe a French crime heist movie is not ideal right now since I can't read the fucking subtitles while I look at Instagram.
No, I think that's good. I need more stuff like that. And I think also like when I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch a foreign film, and where's like, I'm going to watch a serious foreign film. It's like, that's not the only kinds of movies they make there.
That's what I've learned in literally it took me like the last year because I'm such a fan of action movies. And I'm like, oh, I'm assuming there are like B action movies in other languages too. And I'm like enjoying the shit out. And Netflix pumps out a lot of like international sort of like decent low, you know, mid-budget action movies that have their very handsome and very beautiful local talent that you don't know, like the handsome Swedish lead in Finnish lead in The 12th Man is like a rapper who's not an actor, and he's a fucking stud and he's very good in it. Yeah.
That's so cool. I'm seeing that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is in there.
Speaks only German in the movie, and he learned it for the movie. He plays a Nazi officer.
I'm obsessed. I think it's so funny when they make non-English speaking actors learn another language for a thing. This is my like Adrian Brody and Peaky Blinders thing where I'm like, they made him speak so much Italian in that, like, he didn't have to do that and they made him do it.
But also you know, sometimes that's the actor going like, give me an excuse to learn Italian, you know what
totally,
I mean,
like totally.
And then they get to tell, like, you know, they get to expense like a fucking 14-day Lake Como vacation as a business expense to learn Italian or whatever.
Right, and like, what is Jonathan Rhys-Meyers doing that he can't learn German? He might as well learn German.
Right. Well, I watched the whole movie not realizing it was him. I'm like, he really looks like, but he's playing a German guy, I'm assuming.
That's so weird.
And I don't even know if he's speaking good or bad German because he's barely, like, I'm reading the subtitles anyway. So it's so crazy. And then I looked it up on the IMDb trivia and I was like, that was him. And he was speaking a language. And I'm like, I didn't know he spoke German. It's like, he learned it for the movie. And I'm like, wow. Oh my God. Highly recommend. Fran, where can the shithead listeners of this podcast find you and your excellent writings and whatnots on?
Oh my gosh. I'm a staff writer at Brightwall Dark Room, so I do like a lot of essay work for them. I'm all around on a bunch of different websites. I do some food stuff for The Takeout. My friend Caroline Simons and I have an extremely lax, not often updated, but ongoing Jude Law podcast called Law School, where occasionally people will leave comments, be like, this is not about the LSAT. And I'm like, sorry to disappoint.
We are actually the number one podcast in lawyer education, which is helps with SEO, but people are let down immediately.
Yeah, but maybe they watch a good movie, you know?
Fingers crossed.
And I know people who are lawyers are not watching movies otherwise. Right. But that's where I am. Yeah, Brightwall Dark Room's sort of the main spot for my writing. And I'm on Letterboxd, the website where everyone's logging stuff. Sometimes I do bits. Sometimes I write a long paragraph that has nothing to do with the movie.
Really, I just signed up for Letterboxd. I just started fucking around. I'll follow you back on
yeah,
that.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Welcome. It's so fun.
I'm excited. Fran, I'll tag your social media in this with the post, but thank you so much for coming on High and Mighty. This has been really
fun
for me.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a blast.
Yeah. I'm hoping that the rest of I Miss Movies Month goes this well, but I think you set the bar a little high.
Ooh, thank you.
I'm definitely going to watch The Nest, and I highly recommend listeners watch The 12th Man and Local Hero. I'm at Gabrus on all social media. If you're a movie fan, check out Action Boys, a Patreon podcast where we talk about classic action movies for longer than the length of the film. And we have a bunch of free episodes out on an Action Boys free feed on podcasts and on the Patreon that you can find if you want to give it a shot that way, listeners. And the new Gino Lombardo show is season 2 is just wrapping up right now on Stitcher Premium. So give that a listen. And as always, bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Well, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on!
Do it now!